the Battle of Alta. There were a few before it, but this one seemed to glow on the shelf, beckoning me. There weren't any missing spots in this row. These didn't get moved often. There also wasn't a viewing device in here, so did I just grab it and go? Bold, defiant. Even if lately you don't feel like you're either one. I palmed the case and ducked out of the room. No alarm sounded. Not quite believing it, I stepped out of the building, my prize in hand. The secret. Right here, in my fingers. I owed Cobb an enormous debt. Not just for today, but for everything. For making space for me in his classroom, when no one else would give me a chance. For suffering me all those weeks, for not punching me square in the face when I'd called him a coward. I'd make it up to him. Somehow. I tucked the data square into my pocket and strode toward the training building. I could probably plug this into my mock pit, though could I even use that while on medical leave? I was so single-minded in my attention that I didn't notice the people I was passing until one called out to me. Wait, Spin? I froze, then turned. It was FM, wearing a skirt. Like, a real skirt and blouse. Her short blonde hair done with silver barrettes. Stars, where have you been? She said, grabbing me by the arm. In your cave? Where else would I be? You have leave, she said. The domineering authoritaria has relaxed its vice-like grip on us. We can go off base. I go off base every night. This is different, she said, pulling me by my arm. Come on. Your lucky quirk sent me to fetch something for her. Kimmelin? I said. You've seen her since she left? Of course I have. It's not like she moved to another planet or something. Come on! I wasn't likely to change FM's mind when she was in one of her crusading moods, so I let her tow me after her. Out past the gates of the base, along the rows of buildings, into one I'd never paid much attention to before, which held a completely new world. Chapter 38. The restaurant wasn't much, really. A jumble of tables full of younger pilots and cadets, dim lighting. A man playing hand drums in the corner for some music. FM pulled me to a table where Arturo sat with his arm around a girl I didn't recognize. Short hair, brown skin. Kimmelin sat primly at the table with a very large, very purple drink in front of her. Next to her was Ned. Ned. I hadn't seen him in weeks. Ever since that night on the launch pad. He had on trousers and a button-up shirt, and a jacket was draped across the back of the chair. It was strange to see him in street clothes, especially next to Arturo, who had on his cadet's jumpsuit. I could hear Ned's easygoing voice over the hum of other chatter in the room. I never said I was that kind of stupid. I'm the other kind of stupid. You know. Likeable stupid. Arturo rolled his eyes, but the girl next to him leaned forward. Ned, she said, stupid is stupid.
No, it's not. You're talking to an expert.
Guys, FM interrupted, presenting me with hands raised to the side. Look who I found slinking around the base. She was moping about how she can't shoot anything for a few days. Ned thumbed toward FM.
See? She's the other kind of stupid.
FM smacked him on the back of the head, and he grinned. Then he stood and grabbed me in a suffocating bear hug.
Good to see you, Spin. Order something to eat. Arturo's paying.
I am?
You're rich.
So are you.
I'm the other kind of rich, the poor kind.
Oh, for the saint's sake, Arturo said. Don't use the saint's name in vain, Kimmelin said.
You do all the time.
I'm religious, you're not, so it's okay for me. Ned grinned, using his foot to hook a chair from the next table over, then pulling it to us. He waved for me to sit down. I did so, hesitant. I was still distracted by the recording in my jumpsuit pocket. At the same time, seeing Ned and Kimmelin made me feel warm. This was something I needed. So I tried to forget about the recording for now.
Spin, this is Bryn,
Arturo said, pointing to the girl sitting close, very close, to him.
A friend from before flight school.
I honestly don't know how you all suffer him, she said. He pretended to know everything before he became a pilot. He must be impossible now. He mock-punched her lightly on the shoulder, smiling. Yes, it was clear that this was an established relationship. How had I never known that Arturo was attached? I would know, I thought, if I ever got to spend any time outside of class with the rest of them. A few seconds later, FM set something purple and bubbling in front of me, along with a basket of fried algae strips. She settled into her own seat and tossed a pouch to Kimmelin. Found your necklace, she said, under your bed. Thank you, dear, Kimmelin said, opening it and checking inside. I did pitch something of a fit when I left, didn't I? Are you guys coming back to the DDF? I asked. Are we going to talk to Cobb? They need pilots. Maybe we could get them to take you back. Ned and Kimmelin shared a look. Then Ned took a long drink. No, he said. Cobb said most of the class would wash out. So they're expecting this, right? They're not going to take us. And I'm not sure I could do that to my mother after... Silence. Conversation at the table died. I might not be coming back, but at least I made cadet, Kimmelin said, perking up. My parents are proud, and the gunners in Bountiful are full of chatter about me. But, I mean, flying, I said, although I knew I should leave well enough alone. We aren't like you, Spin, Ned said. Flying was great. I'd go back up in a heartbeat, but something about the DDF, the culture, the throwing cadets into battle, the desperation. FM gave him two thumbs up. Kimmelin just looked down at her lap. She was probably thinking what I was. The DDF had a reason to be desperate. When cadets flew, it wasn't only for practice, or even because the DDF was callous with lives. It was because we needed more pilots in the air, however inexperienced. Growing up in Igneous, I'd known that the fight against the Krell was a valiant, dangerous endeavor. But before coming to Alta, I'd never realized quite how close to the edge we were. I kept my mouth shut, though, because I didn't want to depress everyone. The conversation turned to some big game yesterday. Hurl's old team had won. Ned raised his glass, and the others did as well, so I joined in. I took a sip of my purple drink and almost spat it out. It was so sweet. I covered it up by trying one of the fries. My mouth exploded with flavor and I froze, eyes wide. I practically melted into a puddle. I'd had fried algae before, but it had been nowhere near as good as this. What were those spices? Spin? Arturo asked. You look like someone just stepped on your toe. I held up a fry, fingers trembling. So good. She's been living on rats for the last few months, FM pointed out. Her taste buds are undergoing serious atrophy. You have such a unique way with words, FM, Kimmelin noted. Not like anything I've heard. How many of these can I have? I asked. I got the whole basket for you, FM said. Arturo is paying, after all. I started stuffing them into my mouth, comically, by intention. But honestly, I wanted to get as much down as I could before I woke up, or someone kicked me out of here, or something exploded. Bryn laughed. She's aggressive. You have no idea, Arturo said, smiling as she played with a curl of his hair. Scud. It was criminal how little I knew about my flightmates. Where's Jorgen? I said, talking around bites of food.
He wouldn't want to come, Ned said. Too important for us.
You didn't even invite him? I asked.
Nah,
Arturo said. But isn't he your friend?
That's how we know he wouldn't come, Ned said. Say, how's old Cobb getting by? Has he said any interesting curses lately?
Spin gave him a bit of a black eye last they spoke, Kimmelin noted. I swallowed my mouthful of fries. I was wrong to say what I did. If you don't say what you're thinking, Kimmelin said solemnly, then it will stay in your head. You deconstructed him, FM said, raising a finger. He was relying on the very thing he was denying. I looked down at my basket, which was somehow already empty. FM swept it away and walked off to the counter, probably to get me another. I could hear the fryer, and the pungent, crisp scent in the room made my mouth water for more. This wasn't too expensive, was it? Did I care right now? I tried the drink again, still too sweet. FM set another basket of fries in front of me, fortunately, and I attacked them. The spices were just so good. Flavor that made my mouth wake up, as if from a long slumber. The others continued to reminisce about Hurl. Their voices tinged with the same pain I felt. They got it. They understood. I wasn't alone, not here. I found myself explaining what Jorgen and I had done. They listened solemnly to the details.
I should have gone with you, Arturo said. You think Cobb would let me hold her pin for a moment, if I asked, before he gives it back to the family?
Bryn rubbed his arm as he looked down at the table.
Remember that time, Ned said, that you bet she could eat more algae patties than me at dinner?
She ended up on the floor, FM said, wistful. On the floor, just lying there, groaning. Complained about it all night, claiming the patties were fighting in her stomach. The others laughed, but Arturo stared at his cup. He seemed hollow. He'd almost died in that battle. Hopefully, the ground crew would have his ship running again by the time our leave was done. That, of course, made me think of the work Rig was doing on Embat, and the fact that I owed him a lot. FM, I said, what do you think of smart guys?
I'm already taken, Arturo said with a smile.
FM rolled her eyes. Depends. How handsome are we talking?
Handsome, in a reserved way. Guys, I'm already taken, Arturo said again. FM would only want to romance someone low-class, Ned said, to defy the powers that be. A kind of star-crossed, impossible love is the only love FM would accept.
My entire life isn't dominated by being a rebel, Ned, she said.
Yeah? Ned said. What kind of drink did you get?
I noticed, for the first time, that her drink was orange, while everyone else was having purple. She rolled her eyes again. You are stupid.
The right kind?
The annoying kind.
I'll take it.
Their banter continued, and I sat back, enjoying my fries until Bryn got up to use the restroom. With her gone, it was just our flight, and I found myself itching to say something to them, now that we were away from the DDF headquarters, where I always felt like someone was watching. Can we talk about something? I finally said, interrupting a story Ned was telling. I keep thinking about the questions Arturo brought up in class that one time. Isn't it weird that we can fight an enemy for 80 years and have only a vague idea what they look like? Kimmelin nodded. How convenient is it that the Krell never commit more than a maximum of 100 fighters to an individual assault? The defense platforms up in the debris field explain a lot of why we're still alive down here. But this question bothers me. Couldn't the Krell send twice as many and overwhelm us? It's suspicious, FM said. Very.
You'd say that no matter what, Ned said.
And in this case, do you disagree? FM asked. He didn't reply. We can't be the only ones who have asked these questions, right? I said. So, does the DDF really not know the answers? Or are they hiding them? Like they were hiding the truth about my father.
Okay, to play devil's advocate, Arturo said. Perhaps they just don't share that sort of intel with cadets and non-combatants. I know you don't like the Admiral's spin, with good reason, but her record is excellent, and she has some very good advisors.
And yet we're losing, I said, pulling my seat closer to the table, trying to speak quietly. You all know we are. The Krell are going to eventually get us. The others fell silent, and Arturo glanced around, checking to see if any other occupied tables were close enough to hear us. They don't want us asking these questions, Kimmelin said. Remember that time at dinner when Arturo was talking? How the passing officer told him to shut up? Everyone but Cobb shuts down any conversation about the hard questions. They need meatheads, FM added. Pilots who blindly do what they're told and never express an ounce of originality, compassion, or soul. Arturo's girlfriend reappeared, winding her way back to our table. I leaned in closer. Just think about it, I said quietly. Because I am. I felt at my pocket, and the data chip tucked inside. The conversation turned to lighter topics, but FM looked at me and smiled, a twinkle in her eyes, as if she was proud of my questions. She seemed to think I'd always been some brainwashed, defiant zombie. But she didn't know me. Didn't know how I'd lived most of my life outside their society, wandering the tunnels and scavenging. If anything, I would want Defiance to be more brave, more heroic, more like in Gran Gran's stories. But I suppose that she and I could agree on one thing in this area. The current leadership of the DDF left something to be desired. I let FM, well, Arturo, buy me a third basket of fries. Then I eventually excused myself. I had enjoyed the meal with them, but there was something else I needed to do. It was time to find some answers. Chapter 39. Rig was gone by the time I got back to my cavern, though he appeared to have made some good progress on the booster. Doomslug was sitting on a rock near the wing, and I scratched her head as I walked to the cockpit, then climbed in. I felt a strange sense of inevitability. I carried long-kept secrets in my pocket, the answers at long last to what had happened with my father. Why was I suddenly so reluctant? I closed the cockpit. Embot, do you know how to get the hologram out of something like this? I held up the metal case, showing the connectors on the bottom.
Yes, he said. That's a standard format. See the series of ports underneath the panel marked A118? You want the port that reads SSXB.
I followed the instructions, hesitating only briefly before plugging in the case. Embot hummed to himself.
Ah, curious. Curious.
What?
I'm drawing out the suspense so you enjoy the surprise.
Please don't.
Humans prefer.
Just tell me.
Fine, complainer. This includes a great deal of data. A 3D holomap, but also the original ship transponder data, radio signals of the battle, and even some camera footage from inside bunkers. This would be very hard to fake.
Fake? I hadn't considered that, but now I found myself anxious. Are you sure?
I'd spot any edits. Would you like to watch it?
Yes. No.
Then climb out.
Climb out?
My holoprojector can emit a small version of the battle for you to watch.
I heaved myself out of the cockpit, scratching Doomslug on the head, she'd moved to the nose of the ship, and dropped with a thump to the rocky floor. A battle appeared in front of me. When Cobb watched us fly, everything was painted with bold colors, bright red and blue ships. Embot instead projected the ships in exacting miniature. They flew in waves before me, so real that I couldn't stop myself from reaching out and touching them, which broke them into granular particles of something that wasn't quite light. The Krell appeared next, looking even more unfinished than they did now, less regular. Wires hanging out at odd angles, wings that had rips in them, patchwork creations of metal. My little cavern became a battlefield. I sat down and watched in silence. Embot's holoprojector didn't produce sound. Ships went up in flares of muted death. They flew like gnats without wings or buzz. I knew the battle. I'd been taught it, memorized the tactics employed. Watching, however, I felt it. Before, I'd imagined the great maneuvers as, against the odds, 40 human fighters faced down 2.5 times that many enemies. I'd pictured a bold defense, bordering on desperation, but always in control. Now that I was a pilot, though, I could feel the chaos, the haphazard pace of the battle. The tactics seemed less grand, no less heroic, but far more improvised, which actually raised my opinion of the pilots. It went on for quite a while, longer than any of Skyward Flight's skirmishes had gone, and I picked him out easily. The best fighter in the bunch. The one who led the charges. It felt arrogant to think I could single out my father's ship from the crowded mess, but there was something about the way he flew. "Can you identify the pilots?" I asked. Little readouts appeared above each ship, listing call signs and designations. Hope 7, the ship's label read. Call sign, Chaser. Arrogant or not, I called it accurately. Despite myself, I tried again to touch his ship and found tears in my eyes. Fool girl. I wiped them as my father fell in with his wingmate. Call sign Mongrel, Cobb. Another ship joined them. Call sign Ironsides. Then two more I didn't recognize. Call signs Rally and Antique. Those five were all that remained of my father's initial flight of 8. The battle casualties were very high. What had begun as 40 ships was now 27. I stood up and walked after my father's ship as it swooped through the cavern. The first citizens fought frantically, but their bravery bore fruit as they drove the Krell back. I knew they would, yet still found myself watching breathlessly. Ships exploded as little flashes. Lives spent to found what would become the first stable society and government on Detritus since the Defiant had crashed here. That society and government were both flawed. FM was right about how unfair it was, how single-minded and authoritarian. But it was something. It existed because these people, these pilots, had defied the Krell. Near the end of the battle, the Krell pulled back to regroup. From my studies, I knew they would make only one more push before finally retreating into the sky. The human battle lines reformed, flights grouping together, and I could almost hear them making verbal confirmations of status. I knew this moment. The moment when one ship, my father's, broke from the pack. My heart about stopped, my breath caught. But he flew upward. I leaped onto a rock, then onto Embot's wing, trying to follow my father as he flew higher into the sky. I reached up and could imagine what he'd seen. I somehow knew what it was. My father had spotted a hole in the debris, like the one he'd pointed out to me. The one I'd only ever seen a second time, flying Embot, when the debris had lined up just right. I read something into his disappearance. Not cowardice at all. To me, his move, flying upward, was obvious. The battle had been going for an hour. After this desperate stand, with the enemy regrouping for another push, my father had worried the fight would fail. So he'd done something desperate. He'd gone to see where the Krell came from, to try to stop them. I felt a chill, watching him fly upward. He was doing what he'd always told me. He had tried to aim for something higher. His ship vanished. "He didn't run," I said. I wiped the tears from my eyes again. He broke formation. He may have disobeyed orders, but he didn't run. "Well," Embot said, "it..." "That's what they're covering up," I said, looking toward Embot's cockpit. "They branded him a coward because he flew up when he wasn't supposed to." "You might. Cobb has known all this time. It must have torn him up inside. It's why he doesn't fly. Guilt for the lies he's perpetuated." "But what did my father see? What happened to him? Did he..."
"Spensa," Embot said. "I'm jumping ahead a short time. Watch."
A speck of light, like a star, dropped down from the top of the cavern. My father's ship returning? I reached out toward it, and the holographic ship swooped down, passing through my hand. When my father reached the other four ships in his flight, he hit his IMP and brought down their shields. Wait, what? As I watched, the Krell returned in a surging, final assault. My father spun in a perfect loop and unleashed his destructors, destroying one of his own flightmates. It can't be. Call sign Rally died in a flash of fire. My father swooped around, joining the Krell, who didn't fire on him, but supported him, as he attacked another member of his former flight. No, I said. No, it's a lie. Callsign Antique died trying to run from my father. Embot, that's not him, I yelled.
Life signs are the same. I cannot see what happened above, but it is the same ship, with the same pilot. It's him.
He destroyed another ship in front of my eyes. He was a terror on the battlefield, a disaster of steel and fire. No. Ironsides and Mongrel fell in together, tailing my father. He shot down someone else. That was four of the first citizens he'd killed. I felt empty. I slumped to the ground. Mongrel fired. My father dodged, but Mongrel stayed on him, hunting him, until finally he scored a hit. My father's ship exploded in a tiny inferno, the pieces spiraling down before me, raining as burning debris. I barely watched the rest of the battle. I just stared at the spot where my father's ship had vanished. Eventually, the humans were victorious. The remaining Krell fled in defeat. 14 survivors. 25 dead. One traitor. The hologram vanished.
Spencer, Embot said. I can read your emotional state as dazed.
You're sure this data couldn't be faked?
The plausibility of this record being falsified without my ability to detect? Considering your people's technology? Highly improbable. In human terms, no, Spencer. There's no way this is fake. I'm sorry.
Why? I whispered. Why would he do that? Was he one of them all along? Or what did he see up there?
I have no data that could help answer those questions. I have voice recordings of the battle, but my analysis considers it normal battle chatter. At least, until your father saw the hole in the sky.
Play that, I said. Let me listen to it.
I can hear the stars.
I'd asked for it. But hearing my father's voice again, after all these years, still hit me with a wave of emotion. Pain. Love. I was a little girl again, in that moment.
I can see them too, Cobb, my father said. Like I saw them earlier today. A hole in the debris field. I can get through. Chaser!
Ironsides said.
Stay in ranks. I can get through, Judy. I've got to try. I've got to see.
He paused. Then his voice grew softer.
I can hear the stars.
The line was silent for a short time. And then Ironsides spoke.
Go, she said. I trust you.
The audio cut out.
After that, Embot said, your father flew up out of the debris field. The sensors don't record what happened up there. Then, approximately 5 minutes and 39 seconds later, he returns and attacks.
Does he say anything?
I have only one little clip, Embot said. I assume you want to hear it?
I didn't, but I had to anyway. Tears streaming down my face. I listened as Embot played the recording. The open channel, with many voices talking in the chaos of the battle. I distinctly heard Cobb shouting at my father.
Why? Why, Chaser?
Then, almost inaudible over the chatter, my father's voice, soft, mournful.
I will kill you, he said. I will kill you all.
The cavern fell silent again.
That is the only time I can find where he spoke after returning,
Embot said. I shook my head, trying to make sense of it. Why wouldn't the DDF publicize this? They had no problem condemning him as a coward. Why hold back the truth when it's worse?
I could try to guess, Embot said, but I'm afraid without further information, I'd merely be making things up.
I stumbled to my feet, then climbed into Embot's cockpit. I hit the close button, sealing the canopy, then turned off the lights.
Spencer?
I curled up into myself. and lay there.
Chapter 40. Knowledge of my father's treason bled like a physical wound inside me. The next day, I barely got out of bed. If class had been going on, I'd have missed it. My stomach responded to my mood, and I felt physically ill, nauseous, sick. I had to eat, though, and eventually forced myself to gather some bland cave mushrooms. Rig quietly toiled away, welding and tying wires. He knew me enough not to bother me once he saw I wasn't feeling well. I hated looking sick in front of people. I couldn't decide if I wanted to unload my news on him. I wasn't sure I wanted to talk to anyone about it. If I didn't talk about it, perhaps I could pretend I'd never discovered the truth. Perhaps I could pretend my father hadn't done those awful things. That night, M'Bot tried multiple, terrible ways to cheer me up, apparently running down a list of emotional support methods. I ignored him and somehow managed to sleep. The next morning, I felt a little better physically, but still a wreck emotionally. M'Bot didn't chatter at me as I skinned some rats, and when I asked what was wrong, he said, "Some humans like to be given time to grieve on their own. I will stop speaking to you for 2 days to see if isolation provides the needed support. Please enjoy moving through the stages of grief." For the next while, I just kind of existed, living beneath a looming, ominous truth. Ironsides and Cobb had lied about my father, but they'd lied to make his crime seem less terrible. They'd protected our family. If I'd been treated this poorly as the daughter of a coward, what would have happened to the daughter of a traitor? Suddenly, everything Ironsides had done to me made sense. My father had killed multiple members of his own flight, her friends. No wonder she hated me. The remarkable thing was that Cobb didn't. 4 more hard days passed. I spent them occasionally hunting, but mostly quietly helping Rig with the booster. He prodded a few times about what I was feeling, and I almost told him. But for some reason, I couldn't. This wasn't a truth I wanted to share, not even with him. Finally, the next morning, I had to make a decision. Our leave was over. Did I return? Could I face Cobb? Could I continue to act like an insubordinate brat, spitting on the Admiral's shoes now that I knew? Could I live and fly with this shame? The answer, it turned out, was yes. I needed to fly. I stepped into our training room at 06:30, first to class. Of course, there were only 4 of us left at this point. The mock pits appeared to have gone through some kind of maintenance during our leave. Though the workers weren't there currently, the cushions had been removed, and the side of Jorgen's rig was open, with the internal wires exposed. FM pushed open the door, wearing a clean jumpsuit and a new pair of boots. Arturo followed, chatting softly with her about the game they'd gone to last night. I got the impression that Ned liked FM, as he'd gotten them the seats. "Hey," FM said when she saw me. She gave me a hug and patted me on the shoulder, so my grief was apparently still visible. So much for my air of being a strong warrior. Cobb shoved open the door with a distracted expression, sipping pungent coffee and reading some reports. Jorgen accompanied him, walking with his customary distinguished air. Wait, when did I start seeing him as distinguished? "Cobb," Arturo said, poking at one of the mock pits. "Didn't anyone tell them our leave was ending? How are we going to practice?" "Holo practice is basically done for you lot," Cobb said, limping past without looking up. "You only have 5 weeks left of flight school. From now on, you'll do most of your time on real machines. We'll meet at the launch pad in the mornings." "Great," I said, with an enthusiasm I didn't feel. Cobb nodded toward the door, and we hurried out into the hallway. Arturo fell into step beside me. "I wish I could be more like you, Spin," he said as we walked. "Like me? Always so straightforward and bold," he said. "I really do want to fly again. I do. It will be fine." He sounded like he was trying to convince himself,
How did it feel to nearly die as he had? To get shot while your shield was down? I tried to imagine his panic, the smoke in his cockpit, the sense of helplessness. You are bold, I said. You're getting back in the cockpit. That's the important part. You didn't let it frighten you away. For some reason, coming from me, that seemed to really strengthen him. How would he feel to hear that my emotions weren't nearly as straightforward or as bold as he assumed? We changed into flight suits, then walked out onto the launch pad, passing our POCOs in a line. Arturo's spot was empty, though, and I found him chatting with Siv, one of the members of the ground crew. She was a tall, older woman with short white hair. You'll need to take Skyward 6, Amphi, she was saying to Arturo, then pointed. We still don't have your ship running. I glanced toward the repair bay, where the nose of a POCO still stuck out. What's the hang-up? Arturo asked. We have the booster fixed, Siv said, and we tested the acclivity ring, but we had to rip out the shield igniter. Still waiting for a replacement. Should have new ones in a batch next week. So you've been assigned to Skyward 6, unless you want to fly without a shield. Arturo reluctantly walked to Kimmelin's former ship. I continued on to Skyward 10. It was a little hard to think of this as my ship, with M'Bot back in the cavern. But 10 had done right by me. She was a good fighter. Instead of my normal ground crew waiting to help me strap in, I found Cobb standing there, holding my helmet. Sir? I asked him.
You look like you're having a rough day, Spin, he said. You need more time?
No, sir.
I'm supposed to report your status to medical. Maybe you should go in and have a chat. Meet one of Thior's new counselors.
I lifted my hand, holding out the little case of data I'd taken from the library. The secrets that, it turned out, I really hadn't wanted to know. I'm fine, sir. He studied me, then took the data case. He handed me my helmet, which I inspected, finding the sensors inside.
Yes, Cobb said. They're still monitoring your brain.
Have they found anything important? I still didn't know what to make of all this, but the idea of medical spying on my brain while I flew made me uncomfortable.
I'm not at liberty to say, cadet. Though I get the impression that they're eager to start testing all new cadets, using data they've collected on you.
And you really want me to go in and meet with their counselors, so they can run more weird tests on me? I grimaced. I had enough problems without wondering why medical was worried about my brain.
You shouldn't be so afraid of medical, he said, tucking the case into his front shirt pocket and pulling something from it.
A folded sheet of paper.
Dr. Thior is a good person. Take this, for example.
Curious, I took the sheet of paper and read it. Authorization for release of restrictions on Cadet Spencer Nightshade, it read. Full cadet privileges instated. Memo number 11723. It was signed by Admiral Judy Ivins. What? I asked. Why?
After your visit to medical, someone sent Dr. Thior a tip, explaining that you were living in the wilderness and being forced to catch your own food. The doctor raised an enormous fuss about you being isolated from your flight, and the Admiral finally backed down. You can sleep and eat in the school building now.
I felt a sudden, almost overwhelming relief. Oh, stars. Tears crept to the corners of my eyes. Scud. As good as this news was, it was the wrong time. I was already in a fragile emotional state. I just about lost it right there on the launch pad. I forced out. I wonder who sent that tip to Dr. Thior.
A coward.
Cobb,
I don't want to hear it, he said,
and pointed toward the cockpit.
Get strapped in. The others are all ready.
He was right, but I had to ask. Cobb, is it true? What happened in that hollow recording of the Battle of Alta? Did he do that? Cobb nodded.
I got a good look at him while we were dogfighting. We passed close enough that I could see straight into his cockpit. It was him, Spencer. The angry snarl on his face has haunted me ever since.
Why, Cobb? Why would he do that? What happened up there in the sky? What did he see? Cobb didn't answer. He gestured for me to climb up the ladder, so I pulled myself together and climbed. He followed up the ladder and stood there, in the ground crew spot, as I settled into the cockpit. I again inspected the helmet with the strange sensors inside. They really think they can tell from my brain? I asked. They think they can determine if I'll do what my father did? Cobb gripped the edge of the cockpit, leaning in.
You don't know it, kid. But you're at the center of an argument that goes back generations. Some people say that your father proves that cowardice is genetic. They think there's some defect inside you.
Cobb's expression grew grim, his voice softer.
I think that's utter nonsense. I don't know what happened to your father. I don't know why my friend tried to kill me, or why I was forced to shoot him down. Killing him has haunted me. I don't think I could ever fly again. But one thing I can't believe is that someone is destined to be a coward or a traitor. No, I can't accept that. I could never accept that.
He pointed toward the sky.
But Ironsides does believe it. She is certain you'll inevitably turn into either a coward or a traitor. You prove her wrong by getting back into the sky and becoming a model pilot. One so scudding perfect, everyone feels embarrassed to have ever questioned you.
And what if they're right? What if I am a coward? Or what if I do end up-
Don't ask stupid questions, cadet. Strap in. Your flight is ready.
Yes, sir, I said immediately, strapping in. As I raised my helmet to my head, Cobb took hold of my arm. Sir? I asked. He considered for a moment. He looked one way, then the other.
Do you ever see anything strange, Spin?
He asked.
In the darkness?
Like what?
Eyes,
he said softly. I shivered, and my cockpit felt suddenly colder.
Hundreds of small eyes, he said, opening up in the blackness, surrounding you, as if the attention of the entire universe has suddenly focused on you and you alone.
Hadn't M'Bot said something about eyes?
Your father said things like that before the incident,
Cobb said, visibly shaken.
And he'd say he could hear the stars.
Like Grand-Grand said, I thought. Like he said right before he flew up to them. Had he just been talking about the old exercise that Grand-Grand had taught? The one of imagining you were flying among the stars? Or was there more? There had been a couple of times when I'd thought for certain I could hear them up there.
I can tell from your horrified expression,
Cobb said,
that you think I have suddenly started raving like a madman. It does sound silly, doesn't it?
He shook himself.
Well, never mind that. If you for some reason see anything like I described, tell me. Don't talk to anyone else, not even your flightmates, and never say anything about it over the radio. Okay, Spencer?
I nodded, numb. I almost told him about what I'd heard, but stopped myself. Cobb was the only real ally I had, but in that moment, I panicked. I knew that if I told him I thought I heard the stars, he'd yank me out of the cockpit. So I held my tongue as he climbed down the ladder. He'd told me to talk to him if I saw anything, not if I heard something. And I'd never seen anything like he said. Eyes? Hundreds of small eyes, opening up in the blackness, surrounding you. I shivered again, but pulled on my helmet. Perhaps I wasn't in the best of shape today. Shaken, sickened by news, and now thoroughly confused. But I knew that if I didn't get back into the air, I'd go crazy for certain. So, when Jorgen called for us to take off, I did so.
Chapter 41 2 weeks later, I was feeling a little more stable as I flew my Poco through a sequence of valleys, skimming the surface of the planet. I don't see anything, I said over the flight channel. Me neither, FM said. She was flying at my wing.
The trick is to remain alert
on a long patrol, a female voice said in our helmets.
Being a good scout isn't about being able to see well. It's about being able to give your attention to a monotonous job. It's about not letting your mind wander into daydreams.
Well, I'm in trouble, I thought.
If you end up in a scout team, said the woman, call sign Blaze, you'll get a Val-class ship, which has traded its 138 Stuart destructors for a single 131 with far less firepower. But your sensor systems are better, longer range, with more detail. It's still tricky to catch enemy Krell who are flying under the radar. But fortunately, they often use the same tactic of trying to sneak up on AA guns. Since you know what they're going to do, you can anticipate their moves.
That same old adage. If you knew what the enemy would do, you had an advantage. I'd tried that, in the battle where Hurl had died. I'd saved Kimmelin, but I'd left my wingmate alone. Nobody blamed me. It had been the right move to break off and protect Kimmelin. It still gnawed at me, though. And I was already not paying attention. I tried to snap my focus back to the search for Krell, but I knew I wasn't meant for this sort of duty. I needed something that engaged me, that consumed me, like a good firefight. Blaze kept giving us tips. How to spot the wake of a low-flying ship from the patterns in the dust. How Krell move around hills when trying to hide from scanners. How to tell if something in the distance is a ship or an optical illusion. It was good stuff and important. Even if it wasn't for me, I was glad Cobb had us trying out different combat roles. It expanded my experience, made abstract tactics like flanking flights, reserve ships, and scouting parties into real things. I heard a pop in the sky. Our training with the scouts was happening during an actual battle.
How do you deal with
the emotions of it? Arturo asked over the line.
Of scouting when, you know, when everyone else is fighting, maybe dying?
Blaze asked.
Yeah, Arturo said. Every instinct I have says I should be flying toward that battle. This feels cowardly. We're not cowards, Blaze said, her voice rising. We fly ships with a fraction of the armament of even a Poco. And if we intercept Krell, we might have to fight and slow them on our own to buy time for—
Sorry,
Arturo stopped her. I didn't mean it like that.
Blaze breathed out.
We're not cowards. The DDF makes it very clear that we're not. But you might have to deal with a look now and then. It's part of the sacrifice we all make to see that the Defiant Caverns are kept safe.
I banked through a careful sequence of swerves, trying to use the time to practice my low-elevation maneuvers. Eventually, the debris fall behind us stopped, and Cobb called us in. We fell into formation, did verbals, and flew back to base and landed. While waiting for the ground crew, I happened to glance at the mess hall, and a hint of a smile crept to my lips. I remembered crashing through its hologram on my first day. A wave of guilt erased my smile. It had only been 3 weeks since Hurl's death. I shouldn't feel happy. Siv climbed up the ladder, so I hit the cockpit release and pulled off my helmet, which I handed to her.
Nice landing, she said to me. Anything we should look at on the ship today?
Control sphere feels like it's grinding somewhere, I said. It seems to tug back at me when I move it.
We'll give the mechanism a good greasing tonight, she said. How's that receiving button working? Still sticking?
She trailed off as, on a nearby platform, a Camden-class fighter landed with smoke pouring from the left side of its fuselage. Siv cursed and slid down the sides of the ladder, then went running with several other ground crew members. Feeling sick at the sight of that poor ship, I climbed down, joining Jorgen, who was standing at the edge of our launch pad. We stared across at the fire. Several other fighters landed nearby, and one seemed, remarkably, in even worse shape. Scud. If these were the survivors, how many pilots had we lost?
Were you listening to the flight leader radio channel? I asked.
Yeah, Jorgen said. They got flanked,
then targeted with a double flight of enemy ships. Like the Krell were specifically trying to bring down these fighters, ignoring everyone else.
I breathed out as Arturo and FM joined us, all watching silently as ground crew pulled the barely conscious pilot from the burning ship, saving her life. Others hosed the ship down with foam.
Spin, you were right the other day, Arturo said. When you said the DDF was losing this war?
We're not losing, Jorgen said.
Don't talk like that.
They vastly outnumber us, Arturo said, and it's getting worse. I can show you the stats. The Krell keep replenishing, and we can't keep up.
We've survived for years, Jorgen said. It's always felt like we're on the edge of doom. Nothing's changed.
Arturo and I shared a look. Neither of us believed that. Eventually, Jorgen called for us to fall in for the after-battle debriefing with Cobb. We walked to the training building, and oddly, we found Cobb standing right outside. He was chatting with some people at the entrance. Arturo stopped in place. What? I asked him.
That's my mom, Arturo said, pointing at the woman talking to Cobb. She was wearing a military uniform.
Scud. He walked faster, practically running, as he approached Cobb and his mother. I hurried to catch up, but Jorgen took me by the shoulder and slowed me.
What?
I hissed. What's happening? Ahead, Cobb saluted as Arturo arrived. Like, he actually saluted Arturo. I glanced at Jorgen, and his lips had drawn to a line. I stepped forward, but he pulled me back again.
Give them some space, he said.
FM stopped beside the two of us, watching, not speaking. She seemed to know what was happening, too. Cobb handed something to Arturo.
A pin?
Arturo gazed down at the pin, then went to slam it into the ground, but his mother caught his arm. Gradually, Arturo relaxed, then reluctantly saluted Cobb. Arturo looked back at us, then saluted us as well. His mother stepped away, and Arturo slowly turned and followed, trailed by two men in suits. Cobb limped over to us.
Will someone please tell me what just happened? I demanded. Come on, throw me a hint at least. Should I be worried for Arturo?
No,
Jorgen said.
His parents pulled him out of the DDF. This has been building for a few weeks, ever since he almost got shot down. They've been panicking. Off the record, of course. Nobody would admit to being afraid for their son.
Strings were pulled, Cobb said.
The Admiral compromised. Arturo gets a pilot's pin but doesn't graduate.
How does that work? FM asked. That doesn't make any sense, I agreed. He didn't graduate, but he gets to be a full pilot?
He's been retired honorably from service, Cobb said. Officially, it's because he was needed for supervising cargo flights for his family. If we're ever going to get enough igniter parts, we'll need those shipments from other caverns. Come on, you three. Let's get to your debriefing.
Cobb walked off, and FM and Jorgen joined him. Those two seemed resigned, as if this sort of thing was expected. I didn't follow. I felt indignant on Arturo's behalf. His parents just yanked him out like that? Jorgen is expecting the same thing to happen to him, I remembered. Maybe all of them were ready for this, the ones from highly merited families, at least. Standing there, outside the school, I realized for the first time that I was the only ordinary person in the flight who had made it this far. That made me irrationally angry. How dare his parents shelter him now that it was getting dangerous, particularly against his own obvious desires? Jorgen stopped in the doorway ahead while the others continued on inside.
Hey, he said, looking back at me. You coming?
I stalked up to him.
Arturo's parents were never going to let him fly permanently, he said. I'm honestly surprised that it took them this long to get spooked.
Will the same happen to you?
Will your father come for you tomorrow?
Not yet. Arturo's not going into politics, but I am. I'll need to have a few battles under my belt as a real pilot before my parents pull me out.
So, a little danger, then you'll be protected, coddled, kept safe.
He winced. You realize the only ones who died on our team were the common ones, I snapped. Bim, Morningtide, Hurl. Not a single deep caverner among them.
They were my friends too, Spin.
You, Arturo, Ned, FM. I poked him in the chest with each name. You had training ahead of time. A leg up to keep you alive until your coward families could stick some medals on you and parade you around as proof that you're so much better than the rest of us. He grabbed my arms to stop me from poking him, but I wasn't mad at him. In fact, I could see in his eyes that he was just as frustrated as me. He hated that he was boxed in like this. I grabbed hold of his flight suit by the front, gripping it with two fists. Then I quietly rested my forehead against his chest. Frustrated and, yes, even afraid. Afraid of losing more friends. Jorgen tensed, then finally let go of my shoulders and, likely uncertain what else to do, wrapped his arms around me. It should have been awkward. Instead, it was actually comforting. He understood. He felt the loss like I did. I barely got to be a real part of the flight, I whispered. And it's being ripped apart again. A piece of me is glad he's safe and will stay safe, but another piece of me is angry. Why couldn't Hurl have been kept safe, or Bim? Jorgen didn't respond. Cobb told us on that first day that only one or two of us would make it, I said. Who dies next? Me? You? Why, after decades, don't we even know what we're fighting or why we're doing it?
We know why, Spensa, he said softly. It's for Igneous. And Alta. For civilization. And you're right, the way we do things isn't fair. But these are the rules we play by. They're the only rules I know.
Why is everything about rules to you? I asked, my forehead still resting against his chest. What about emotion? What about feelings?
I don't know. I
squeezed my eyes shut tighter and held on. I thought about the DDF, about Alta and Igneous, and about the fact that I didn't have anything to defy any longer. I'd spent my life fighting against the things they said about my father. Now what did I do?
I do feel things, Spin, he finally said. Like, right now, I feel incredibly awkward. I didn't ever think you were the hugging type.
I released the front of his flight suit, causing him to drop his arms. You grabbed me first, I said.
You were attacking me,
lightly tapping your chest for emphasis. He rolled his eyes, and the moment was over. Strangely, though, as we joined FM and walked toward our new classroom, I realized something. I did feel better. Just a little, but considering how my life had been going lately, I was willing to take what I could get. Chapter 42. A number of days later, FM and I ate with Inkwell Flight and Firestorm Flight, the other two cadet flights who had started at the same time as us. Between them, they had 6 members remaining, meaning that even all of us combined didn't make a full 10-person flight. Most of the conversation swirled around whether or not we'd be collected into a single cadet flight. If that happened, which flight name would we keep? FM argued we should make up a new name, though I figured that since we still had our flight leader, the other two had lost theirs at some point, we should be in charge. I stayed quiet, finishing my food quickly. Part of me kept expecting the Admiral to burst in and haul me off. The food was amazing, and instead of my old patched jumpsuit, I'd been able to requisition 3 new ones that fit me perfectly. The other cadets were growing anxious for graduation.
I'm going to be a scout, said Remark, a boisterous guy with a bowl cut. I've already got an invitation.
Too boring, FM said.
Really? Said one of the girls. I'd have thought it would appeal to you, with all your talk of defiant aggression.
It's so expected, though, FM said, even if I am kind of good at it. As I listened, I wondered if FM would be taken away by her family, too, though she didn't seem as important as Jorgen, who was off at another state function. I idly wondered what it would be like to attend one of his fancy government dinners. I imagined the delicious scandal I would cause. The daughter of the infamous coward.
Of course, everyone would be too polite to say anything, so they'd have to suffer through it while I, being a primitive